हरिः
Purport to 327.28. The knower of the absolute truth is convinced of his awkward position in material association. He knows that he is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and that his position should not be in the material creation. He knows his real identity as part and parcel of the Supreme, who is eternal bliss and knowledge, and he realizes that somehow or another he is entrapped in the material concept. Conception of life. In his pure state of existence, he is meant to dovetail his activities in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. He therefore engages himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness and becomes naturally unattached to the activities of the material senses, which are all circumstantial and temporary. He knows that his material condition of life is under the supreme control of the Lord. Consequently, he is not disturbed by all kinds of material reactions, which he considers to be the mercy of the Lord. So just understand that it's awkward, because otherwise we will think that it's normal, or, you know, there's something not so bad about it, or there's some aspect of it that's okay. And we're talking about this okayness is not the part connected to Krishna, right? It's just, it's okay. You know, it's fine. So he's very convinced that he's not the body, he's the soul, he's serving the Krishna, his duty is to serve Krishna, and that's the only way, you know, and his natural position is to be situated on the spiritual platform. So being like that, then it becomes very easy, right? Because then it's very clear what you should be doing and what's not so important. So moving within the material world means just moving in how to serve Krishna. Because right? In the beginning, it's we're doing what we're doing, then we're connecting that to Krishna. Then with time, it's just we're supposed to be serving Krishna. So whatever's the situation is said here, circumstantial and temporary, right? It's just the circumstances. Previous activities have generated it. You know, what those activities are, why we're here, that's not so important. But it's what you're in now. Right? Because if something's going on now, you don't get into all the things why it did like that. You deal with it. Right? When you have some moments, you can contemplate it. But at the time of action, you can't contemplate why it's like that. Right? You deal with what it is at the moment. Right? Because if you're contemplating why it's like that, unless that's necessary to understand what to do, then one's going to get distracted. Right? One's going to be so worried about how it got there that the moment to do something about it is lost. Right? So therefore, that's not a big important element for him. Right? So how he got here, how this circumstance came up. So simply it is just the reaction of all kinds of material activities. And it's by the Lord's grace that we are in this situation, we have the opportunity to serve Him. Right? So that way, one doesn't get too distracted, or what we, you know, colloquially call, get too mental. Right? No, it's just, this is what situation one's in, it's how to best serve Krishna in that situation, and then do it. then things work very nicely. Yes.
Let's say you might be sick, and maybe doing something wrong that makes you sick, like health-wise. So is it still, you can study health to feel if you can get more aware of, eating properly or more conscious of how to look after the body. But sometimes also, how then do you see that as Krishna's mercy if you don't really know what's correct? Is that still Krishna's mercy?
See, the point is what do you have to deal with?
Well, the body, just maintain.
No, but what, at what stage? Like right now, it means your body is there in a particular condition.
Yes.
So, in dealing with this condition right now, what is the judgment? That you were hungry 3 years ago, and so hungry you could have eaten, three kangaroos, or, you know what I'm saying?
Well, you want your body to be...
Yes, but what do you have to deal with? You want the body to be in good health,
yes.
But what do you have to deal with? What the body was before, or what the body will be,
uh-huh.
Or what the body is right this moment? Yes, so it means... We're talking practically, you have to deal with what situation the body's in this moment. That means the body itself and the circumstances that are there. You know what I'm saying? Let's say someone has been told by the doctor that eat very often, so don't get too hungry, right? Because otherwise you might get acid. Okay? Right? So now you're standing right in the middle of the kirtan, right? They're doing for the thing, and you suddenly get really hungry and you're right in the middle of the temple room. So what should you do? Right? Reach into your bag, pull out that, cheese on rye that you've been putting there since the morning, and then start eating it, right? Because then you're following doctor's orders, no? Does that make sense? But now let's say you're sitting at home and you suddenly get really hungry. What do? You eat something. The other one, at least you wait until you get out of the temple room to some side and then start eating your shit. Yes, it means you have to deal with what is there. That's why he says, which are all circumstantial and temporary. Why you got hungry and you're right in the middle of the temple room. Or you're sitting there and you're surrounded by food and you're not getting hungry. This is just circumstantial. It's just the way it is. So Krishna's mercy is that no matter what the situation, you have an opportunity to serve Krishna. Does that make sense? It doesn't mean that you can't work out, what means that your diet wasn't right. But we're saying is that in dealing with it, you want to eat something. Right? You can't sit there and be contemplating, 3 years ago I did this, and then I did that, and then we went traveling, and then I threw it off worse. No, you're not eating. Just eat. At moments in between, then you can contemplate these things if it'll help. See, because there's also a difference between contemplating because it will actually give you a better idea of what to do in the situation, or it's just the mind wants to contemplate these things because it basically has making you miserable is what it feels is the best thing to do.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Yes.
Like you have mentioned in the past, like remaining in the past is ignorance, future.
Yes. Yes. So the point is means mode of goodness then is deals with knowledge. Knowledge is what is applied for action. So if you want to be able to apply knowledge and action together, then you have to be dealing in the present. Right? Because otherwise you can't apply that knowledge to the future. And you can contemplate the past, but you can't do anything about it. So it means you have to apply it to the present. Otherwise it won't function. Right? So the point is what situation you're in, you have to be able to see that. It's circumstantial. It's there now, but it won't be there after some moments. It's always changing. But the point is, if you want to do something with it now, you have to deal now. You know what I'm saying? So the Vedic is this very nice balance, is that you're dealing in the present, but it's very practical. Right? You understand it's Krishna's mercy, but you're acting. See, because generally what we have is always Krishna's mercy, so you do nothing. Or if we're, you know, very active and doing things like that, then I'm in control of it. No, but it's just circumstantial. You're not in control of the present environment because you didn't. You're not the one creating it. The material energy created it may be created on your previous desire. And like we give the example, when you're at the restaurant and you give an order, you didn't cook the food. Right? You didn't go to the market and buy it. You didn't plan the menu. You didn't buy the pots. You didn't arrange the cook. You know, the waiter is that you had nothing to do with. So that means the material energy is arranging everything, but based on your desire. So that's the way it is with everything. Just that's very obvious. But even in the situation you're in, it's still the way it works. The material energy is doing it. You know what I'm saying? You push the button on your vacuum cleaner, but that the button turns the vacuum cleaner on, you didn't do. That the electricity going through and all that and the motor and someone else made it and made the arrangements and the plugs. You're just taking part in it. That you're moving it on the rug, but then, you know, the point is that it sucks things up. It's doing it, not you. You'll say, I vacuumed the rug. No, the vacuum cleaner vacuumed the rug. Does that make sense? So the whole idea is that you're dealing with the science, but the point is that science is working because it's coming from a person, and we're a person. So therefore, the mind, the mood, the sentiments, all those things are part of it. But the problem is one looks at the science, no sentiment, one looks at the sentiment, no science. So the Vedic is the more you can understand this and balance it, then the better it works. Does that make sense? Yeah. So therefore the mode of goodness means that you're dealing in the present. But you also want to see that you're dealing, you know, from that platform also, from the transcendental platform, using goodness. Because otherwise, you have the practical person who's dealing in the present, but their whole purpose of doing that is the mode of passion or the mode of ignorance. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? It means you can use something for another purpose. You know what I'm saying? You're nice to the person. Right? So that's, you know, considered proper social etiquette. But you could be doing it because you're simply trying to get them into a position where then someone else can then, you know, cause them some problems. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, everything, there is the activity itself, but then there's also the mentality of the activity. So when you combine it all, then you'll say that action was done in the mode of passion, even though it was done at the present, you know, with consciousness and intelligence. But because your purpose of using it wasn't that. Does that make sense?
Because you wanted to gain some result.
Yes.
For the future.
Yeah. But so, therefore, it's not being done because that's your duty. It's being done because you want a particular fruit of result from it. But you have to use the mode of goodness to do that. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the point. You have. So on the very point of how you took care of it, yes, you did everything perfect. You said hello properly. You shook their hand. You did all that. So that was all proper. But that's only part of the bigger picture. Of that you're doing that for some other motive. Right? So the whole activity you have to see according to its overall. But within it, that specifics, you may have been doing it exactly correctly. Does that make sense? So that's how, when you're dealing with, it means the Vedic literature will be describing all this on all the different levels. So the point is this, Krishna consciousness takes care of all the levels. It's the biggest picture. Right? Then you come down to the platform of a Brahman, that I'm not this body, I'm the soul, you know, we don't belong in the material world, you know, that kind of thing. That's very big, less than that. Right? Then you have Dharma, the particular circumstances you're in. Like that, and how those circumstances relate to each other. You know, on a greater social and long-term function. Right? Then more narrower than that is you get into artha. What I can do with this situation, you know, in a shorter term way to get the real results I want. And then the smallest is the senses and the sense objects. You understand? But to deal with any one of those, you have to deal in the present. So even you're dealing on the smallest, the sense gratification, unless you're dealing in the present, it's not going to work. Right? Let us say, you know, you're arranging something, you got your prasad, you put it down, and then you forgot something in your bag, you turned around, you know, got all that, you look back, your plate's not there. Right? It's been moved over. Okay, so now are you going to sit down and go, no, my plate was here, I put it here. So then you start picking up imaginary food and putting it in your mouth, and everybody's looking at you, what's wrong? Is that, what are you looking at? You know, I'm eating my food. You know, is that going to work? You understand? You have to deal. No, the plate's over there. So either you move over there, move the plate back. Does that make sense? So the whole idea is that you have to deal in the present. People who don't deal in the present aren't getting the results. But the problem is when devotees or anybody talks about results, what level are you talking about it on? Right? There's five levels you can deal with it on. Which level is it being dealt with on? Right? So there's the consciousness, you know, which is the fifth level. But there's the mechanics of it, which will be within the first four. Right? So you're dealing with the Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. Then you're dealing in that, but then that's the mechanics, because that goes with the situation. But what's your motive of that? If it's devotion, then that's the best. If it's not devotion, it'll be also Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. But do they match? Are you dealing with Moksha with Moksha? The Dharma with Dharma? Are you using Dharma for Kama, or Dharma for, you know, how you say, Artha? Does that make sense? Otherwise, why would Bhagavatam say, don't use it like this unless you could do that? Right? So the idea is to become aware of all these things. So that's what he's saying. The knower of the absolute truth is convinced of his awkward position. He knows he's part and parcel. His position should not be in the material creation. He knows his real identity is eternality, knowledge, and bliss. Right? So you're talking about a lot of things at once, right? But we wouldn't be talking about it if we couldn't do it. Right? Right? In this pure state of existence, meant to dovetail his activity, so everything's connected to the Lord. So he understands all these things. Then the material world is temporary, so we don't get overly disturbed by it. What situation is there now? That's what we deal with. We have facilities, we use them for Krishna. We don't have facilities, we don't use them. You know, whatever is there, that's what we use. Then we're not worried about it, because whatever it is, it will be temporary. It's nice, it will get not nice. It's not nice, it'll become nice. Right? I mean, that's you could say in a nutshell, that is, what do you call it? Yi Qing, right? The I Ching. That's all it's telling you. If it's good, don't get too excited, because it will become bad. And if it's bad, don't worry, it will become good. That's all it talks about. So it's just how bad it is, means how not much, you know, don't worry, you know, anything like that. That's all. That's just the way the material world works. Yes.
It refers to
you know, from whenever the devotees join, they usually hear that we should contemplate how we got in order to get out.
Contemplate how we got in order to get out.
It's a common...
But how you got into the material world means that we have material consciousness. So that puts us here. So we'll get out by reversing that and not having material consciousness. Because the detail, how will the new devotee understand? You know, you're talking about being able to accommodate the transcendental and the mundane position exactly in the same place at the same time, functioning perfectly together.
Welcome to ISKCON.
Yeah. So that's the whole idea, is that it means, in other words, we perform material activity, that gets us to our situation. Prabhupada says, by contemplating your present situation, then you can tell the past. You can tell one's previous lives. You don't have to go to somebody, you know, to look in a, check the Ouija board or something, right? Means you can contemplate. You're in that situation because you did that before. Right? Does that make sense? If you suddenly notice that you're sitting in a restaurant, how did you get there? Because you walked in the door. Right? And if you don't live next door, then you, a good chance you took some kind of transportation to get there. You know what I'm saying? So it's not actually difficult. It's just that, you know, generally we like the idea that, you know, last night we were some king or some big this or some big that. You know, the other things aren't necessarily so great, you know. But wouldn't that be a disturbance? You were the great king last life and now you're just some schnook, you know? Wouldn't it be better that you were a schnook last life and now it's better, you know? Oh, well. Whatever. So, in the footnote 45, Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 6.16.5, it is our practical experience in this material world that the same person who is one's friend today becomes one's enemy tomorrow. Our relationships as friends or enemies, family men or outsiders, are actually the results of our different dealings. Chitraketu Maharaj was lamenting for his son, who was now dead, but he could have considered the situation otherwise. This living entity, he could have thought, was my enemy in my last life, and now, having appeared as my son, he is prematurely leaving just to give me pain and agony. Why should he not consider his dead son his former enemy and instead of lamenting, be jubilant because of an enemy's death? Okay. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 3.27, Prakrite Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarvashaha. Factually, everything is happening because of our association with the modes of material nature. Therefore, one who is my friend today, in association with the mode of goodness, may be my enemy tomorrow in association with the modes of passion and ignorance. As the modes of material nature work, in illusion we accept others as friends and enemies, sons or fathers, in terms of the reactions of different dealings under different conditions. So the modes are acting, and that's what we're accepting. Because we say, oh, this one's my friend. Why would this one be my friend and that one not? All right, we're dealing with the particular situation and the mode. Because we're taking this body and this subtle body that's acting in this particular way under these modes at present is favorable to me. I call them friend. But the soul is exactly the same, no matter what the situation, what the modes. Right? And we're the soul, we're not the body. So are they doing something that's favorable for me as a soul? Right? Or is it something that they've done with their body that's favorable for me with my body? Or with their emotions and mine that's favorable for mine? So we're so conditioned to think that the material situation is the reality of our existence. Right? It means it's there, but it's not us. Right? Just like these rocks are here, but we're not the rocks. Right? So the same way is that all these things are just adjusting. Right? So this is why without Shastra even contemplating, it's hard to figure out the past, because otherwise one wouldn't consider like that. Right? In other words, my son dies. Right? So if you look at the normal way we look at the cycle of karma means he's getting me back. His last life is as his son, I died. And he was upset with that. So he came this life as the son and now died. So like that's because the previous life to that, then he died on me. But that doesn't, where's the cause and effect really? Right? But here, he was the enemy. And he couldn't harass you enough last life, so he took birth as your son this life, so he could die on you to really make you feel bad.
Vindicated.
Does that make sense? So it means these are how the material nature functions. Does that make sense? Because it doesn't necessarily function the way we think it does. Does that make sense? Because here you're dealing with a material situation. He's a materialist, pious, but materialistic person. Right? Like that. And he's very committed to having a son. Right? He's married 10 million wives just to have a son. Right? So that's committed. You'd have to admit that. That is committed. Right? So the situation, it means basically you have the principle, but as a devotee, then devotees are there. So if the son dies here, it just means they go back to Godhead earlier. They only had that much time that they needed to spend to come to the platform that they're qualified to go back to Godhead. So then they did that. Just they happen to be more qualified than us. So that's the annoying factor. Right? Does that make sense? So they left earlier. And because we're materially attached, that's a disturbance. But if we're not materially attached, then it's not a disturbance. Right? Then it's more of a loss of association. They were that advanced, and we've lost that good association. You understand? So the emotions stay the same, but the whole circumstances change. So in other words, how the materialist looks at the material nature and its cause and effect isn't necessarily a very solid platform, because materially it can change so drastically, and spiritually it changes so drastically. Does that make sense?
How does it change drastically spiritually?
Means that instead of means the other means here in either case he was saying is that the son has died, but the one is that he's the enemy, so the enemy is that, so then that's good. But at the same time is it still doesn't make you feel much better, right? Because but on the spiritual platform the person's, you know, means that's, they're born into the family of devotees, so that means they're a devotee, but they only had a little bit left. Otherwise, why are they born in the family of devotees? If they had a lot of materialism left, they wouldn't be born in your family. Mm-hmm. Right? They'd be born in some nicely situated materialistic family. So they spent that amount of time, now they've gone back to Godhead. So that's great. That's quite drastic from the normal way of looking at it. You know, because then it's something that it's their attainment of going back to Godhead is something special, but at the same time that loss of that association, that's what's lamented. But the point is they're not actually dead. You know, as Krishna's pointing out, it says Bhishma and Drona, they may be killed on the battlefield, but they're old. So as devotees, they'll either go back to Godhead. If not, they'll be born in young bodies, and young bodies are always a bit better than older bodies, right? At least that's how the advertisements go, right? So. Does that make sense? Just struck me, you know, how you have the saying, the youth is wasted on the young, right? So now the four Kumaras, it's not, because
no.
they're so old and mature, but at the same time they're still youthful, right? So then, yes.
So Maharaj, we cannot understand all these topics without Guru Sadhu and Shastra.
No, we can't understand that Guru Sadhu and Shastra. like that, because one might get some idea, a little inkling of it, but that'll just be something left from previous understandings. But to get a complete picture without Guru Sadhu or Shastra won't work. So that's why just basing on what we feel and that is not enough. If it's confirmed by Guru Sadhu or Shastra, then it's okay. But otherwise, you know, the mind could come up with so much, or something comes through, but our situation is different than it was before, and so we'll apply that in another way. Does that make sense? You know, so the person is a very expert, Indian classical musician. They're born into families that do that. The whole family does. They're very expert. So they know exactly what notes go with what you can mix and everything like that. But they're using an enharmonic system and they use no harmony. Right? But he was pious enough to maintain human life, but not enough to maintain it in India. So now he's born in the West. Next life. Right? But because of his karma of dealing with the music, you know, and it's according to Shastra and everything, had guru and all that, so he's actually very expert in it. Just inherently. He goes into the garage and plays, and it's quite good, right? And all that. But the thing is then he knows how these notes go together, but he doesn't put them together according to Shastra anymore. Now he puts them together in chords and other things like that. Does that make sense? So the circumstances have changed, but because now it's not Guru Sadhu and Shastra, he won't put it together in the same way. But he has that inherent, you know, understanding of it. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty. Without Guru Sadhu and Shastra, it still won't come out the same. Because we think, no, because I'm feeling it or I'm thinking it, it must be perfect. But that's then saying that our gross body or subtle body is perfect. No, the soul is perfect, but not the gross and subtle body. The gross and subtle body will never be. It's only perfect when it's connected to the Lord. In other words, our whole existence, what we think it is, it actually isn't. That's why it's called Maya, that which is not. But the point is whatever it is, it doesn't matter. That's why the past isn't so important. It's what will you do with it now, according to the consciousness, you know, the knowledge and skills given by Guru Sadhu and Shastra. Like that. Then we will come up with something proper, something good, you know, something beneficial. So that's why we don't have to become disturbed that the whole situation isn't actually how I think it is. It doesn't matter. You deal with it according to Guru Sadhu and Shastra in the present, and it'll work. You'll get your results. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like the person's there going along, and then he finds out something about, you know, his family or friends that's been, you know, completely different than he thought for the last 20 years. But now they can't function. Right? But factually, you know, you want to get your toast in the toaster, and, you know, it doesn't change how it mechanically works. But emotionally, we're so disturbed because we're thinking of the past, how it would have been, and then what will it be in the future, and this and that, that we can't function. So the point is even if how we were viewing the world, we find out by the proper understanding of Krishna consciousness that it's completely different than that, it still functions in the same way. Does that make sense? So even though these perspectives may completely change how we view things, how everything works stays the same. All that we're changing is the consciousness. I thought it was like this. I was the body. You know, and I'm, you know, the parent of this, you know, this child, and I'm living here in this house, and we're in this economic bracket, and I'm a member, you know, of this particular country, and we have this particular social status, but it's none of that. But still, our day-to-day functioning doesn't change. What changes now is our consciousness. That I'm not those things, but those things have put me in this circumstance that I'm in now. So using this circumstance in Krishna's service, because I would have used the circumstance for my own material purpose. Now I'm using the circumstance for Krishna. Does that make sense? So it doesn't change. What changes is our consciousness, our perspective on it. Right? So the identity changes, but what you're dealing with doesn't. See, but it's like this, is that I want to perform an activity, right? What am I going to use to do that activity? Right? It's not 1960, so telepathy is not going to work. Right? We're actually going to have to use the senses, right? Which means the body. No? Okay. Now, I think I am the body. Right? So therefore, I'm doing the activity. Right? That has to be done with the body. Okay. Now, I read Bhagavad Gita, and then I understand I'm not the body. What's going to do the activity?
Body.
The body. So the activity doesn't change. The situation doesn't change. What changes is the consciousness from I'm the, you know, the field of action to I'm actually the soul. I'm not the field of action. But action is performed with the field. So therefore, the action doesn't change. The method of action doesn't change. Does that make sense? So that's why the devotee doesn't become disturbed as he figures out that his whole life that he thought was reality is not. Because when a karmi figures that out, he's devastated. Like, I'm the body, I do this activity. If I'm not the body, how will the activity be done? No, you never were the body anyway. You just thought you were. You know? But it doesn't change. Yeah, so someone's a friend, is an enemy, is a son, we've accepted that as the material thing because no, the body is what you call the son. What makes the body work is the soul. So actually it's the soul who thinks I'm the parent, or the soul who thinks I'm the child. The body doesn't think any of that. Right? The body's not sitting around and thinking, yes, I am American. Right? You know, it doesn't do that. Right? It doesn't even think I'm a pile of chemicals. Right? It doesn't think. It just sits there. So we apply all this on there, and then we become disturbed by it. So Prabhupada's example here is, you know, it's according to Shastra, it completely turns around exactly where it's, instead of lamenting, we should be having a party. You know? But the point is just as we would say, this is absurd, you know, the other one is just as absurd. But it's just socially acceptable. You know? That's the... So the idea is that you deal with the situation according to one's duties. Because the point is, okay, you know, he's my enemy, how should I deal? Or he's my son, how should I deal? But actually that's the situation is that there's the parent and there's the son. But neither living entities are either of those. So therefore, what's the duty of someone who's the parent? What's the duty of someone as the son? What are they supposed to, what are their activities? That you follow. Because we're not that. That's why duty, Krishna constantly says, perform your duties. But without an attachment to the results. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, then, for not that, and he's the enemy, and says, what am I saying? No, you just do the duties. He's the son, so therefore you go through the proper rituals that the parent does for a son. The son dies. Does that make sense? Like that. And then according to one's Krishna consciousness, then you see it in the proper light. But on the material platform, you can take anything and turn it around any way you like, and it can be, you know, each one is more absurd than the other. Like that. Is it done? You understand? So that's the point is that only Krishna consciousness gives a proper perspective. It brings things into the proper way of seeing, so you can get a balance on things. You know, it actually accommodates the soul, the consciousness, the relationship with God. Because all these other things, it could be this way or that way, and each one is just means we can say, no, but it's more naturally like, yeah, but the point is you're not the body, they're not the body, so nobody's died. Right, just these chemicals aren't functioning in a way that, you know, you want to, you know, hold on your lap anymore. You know what I'm saying? So that's absurd also. But because there's relationships between the living entities and they go through these forms of the five rasas, therefore that has some validity only because of it being a reflection of what is actually real. But to say that it is real, that's illusion. Does that make sense? You know, it's kind of funny, because it's like intellectually you can kind of see it. Yeah. But it's kind of like looking through a haze, right? Mm-hmm. You know,
is that because we're dealing with changing our identity to become...
Yes, means when we're completely convinced, he is convinced. Means that we're sitting here, we're convinced. Otherwise, we wouldn't be sitting here. But as one goes, it's just the maturity of that conviction. Right? So prema is complete conviction. Right? So shraddha is the beginning of conviction. So as we go, then we can say we're adjusting from thinking that we're the material, you know, the body, to understanding we're, you know, fully servant of Krishna. So as we go, the first stages are generally going to be more cloudy, right? And as it goes, it becomes less and less cloudy. You know, so as the sun comes up, then, you know, that fog that's there, then at the more it comes up, the less and less the fog gets. Does that make sense? Yes.
Is it due to you always connected to the nature?
Is it due to that we're connected to the nature?
Yeah, like there's the nature of the person. You might be.
There's the conditioned nature of the person. The nature of the person is Satchidananda. The conditioning is under the modes of nature. So that's always going to be adjusting and changing according to the situations we're in. Right? From our previous activities and our present activities. So it's constantly adjusting. Right? In other words, let's say you have a kaleidoscope. You know kaleidoscope? So you have the kaleidoscope. If you just let it sit there, then it just stays the same. But why is it like that? Because it's been moved. It's like that. Now if you turn it, it adjusts again. So that's what's going on. So we're doing activity, so it's constantly being adjusted. But it's being adjusted from what it was before. You know, so you can say, well, why is it exactly in that particular pattern? Then you'd have to go back, you know, so many steps to get it to that pattern. But the point is what you're seeing and dealing with is what the pattern is right now. You know what I'm saying? But we're not that. But dealing with it is the same. You know what I'm saying? If we're Krishna conscious or not, and we want to cook some potatoes, and the potatoes are sitting in the basket, we have to get the potatoes out of the basket and into the pot to cook. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter if you're, you know, Hiranyakashipu or Prahlad Maharaj, right? It means it's going to be the same process. Does that make sense? Okay, 329. Bewildered by the modes of material nature, the ignorant fully engage themselves in material activities and become attached. But the wise should not unsettle them, although these duties are inferior due to the performer's lack of knowledge. Right. So not unsettling means that you can still function in that position, right? And how much one can appreciate of the philosophy being applied to that situation, that's how much you deal with. Right? Does that make sense? So, yeah. So the elements of using that, you're trying to wake somebody up, but you can also wake them up pleasantly. Right? You can come up and, you know, shake their leg, call their name, or you can come in with, you know, one of those big Chinese gongs, like that, bucket of water, there's a lot of alternatives,
Electricity.
I never thought of that one. I never tried that. But water we've tried. One boy once, he would sleep so heavy that it was middle of summer, so really hot out and everything like that. And no matter what, they were trying to wake him up, took him in Hannah's bed, dragged it outside onto the veranda. Nothing woke him up. So somebody came by and threw a bucket of water on him. And he just suddenly sat up, looked around, and laid back down. Like that. So, he woke up, no one was there, no one wanted to say anything, so okay. So, like that. Okay, does that make sense? So in other words, what situation one's in, that's the situation you apply it to, right? So this knowledge we're giving here may be considered unsettling, right? But the point is you have to bring it to the point of wherever the person is situated and apply it at that circumstance. Then they're not going to be disturbed. So they are attached to the material energy. So how to apply this knowledge to that position of attachment? Right? Then that's not unsettling. So the wise do that. But if it's just a matter of it's Maya, and you're advanced more than them so you can see it, and so you just tell them that and leave it at that, that's not wise. Right? It means you have knowledge, but wise means realization. So you have knowledge, yes, but you don't have realization. Otherwise one wouldn't do that. Right? But one can point it out so that they wake up and are aware, and then bring it to how to apply it in their situation. So they're still comfortable. Their situation hasn't changed, but now their understanding and consciousness has started to change. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. So we tend to not bring it to the situation. So we either leave them as they were by not saying anything, right? Or we say something and not bring it, make it practical for them. Right? So if we're trying to be, less fanatic, so therefore we don't tell them anything. No, the point is that you tell them the same thing, but you bring it to the point where they can use it in their situation. That's the more developed. The devotees are more merciful than the Lord. Men who are ignorant cannot appreciate activities in Krishna consciousness. And therefore, Lord Krishna advises us not to disturb them and simply waste valuable time. But the devotees of the Lord are more kind than the Lord because they understand the purpose of the Lord. Consequently, they undertake all kinds of risks, even to the point of approaching ignorant men, to try to engage them in the acts of Krishna consciousness, which are absolutely necessary for the human being. So now here we're getting two aspects on not disturbing them. Right? So Krishna's point is that they're not interested. So if you bring it up, they may give you trouble. So therefore, Krishna doesn't want the devotees to get into trouble. So he's very kind to the devotees. Right? But those who are not acting in the position of devotees, he's leaving in their position because that's what they want. Right? But the devotee, understanding that Krishna is not actually happy that the living entity is so ignorant that he shouldn't be disturbed. That the devotee, who is protected by the Lord, then he goes and disturbs those ignorant persons. Does that make sense? You know, a Prabhupada says, at risk. All kinds of risks. Because it will please Krishna if you're able to make them. But Krishna himself is not going to do it. Right? So the point is Krishna's leaving him in that position. Right? But the devotee, as service to Krishna, doesn't leave him in that position. But if he's wise, he brings it to the position they're in. In other words, you take the philosophy to the situation that they're in. Right? Rather than just saying it and expecting that they get to it, and if they are, they're sincere, and if they don't, then they weren't sincere. Does this make a difference? Right? So that means if you just leave them where they are, then the problem is we're doing the activity like Krishna would do it, but unfortunately we're not the controllers. So,
sometimes in that specific area, we find that we think we can help, and then the various results come out.
Right.
People get disturbed.
Yeah, but the point is if we're dealing in the present, we try to help. So we view the situation, we think we can help. So you start to help, but you see the reaction as it's coming. Right? And as it's coming, we make adjustments because we know what the result we want. Right? To them to be able to favorably apply Krishna consciousness to their situation. So if we find that it's going away from that, then you adjust. You know, adjust the approach or adjust the application, because when we say we have vichar, vichar means different perspectives you can apply on one thing. So they're all correct. It's just which one's correct for that particular situation. So let's say for us, one would be correct. So in that situation, we'd use it like this, but the other person disturbs them. Does that make sense? You know, so you will use other approaches to that particular situation or that particular application of the philosophy. But it's all according to Guru, Sattva, and Shastra. We never water down the philosophy. It's a matter of which application would be the way to apply it. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let us say, someone's doing something. So, by pointing out some weakness in it, they may be inspired to correct that weakness and make it better. Or it may be the situation is such that by pointing out the weakness, they won't be inspired. So by pointing out what was good about it, they'll be inspired. Right? Because the point is, without inspiration, you don't work. Right? So what will create the inspiration? Because you've pointed out the fault, and if they didn't become inspired, we'll be thinking, well, I was just trying to help. But it didn't help. So the point is either, you know, don't do that anymore because you don't know what to do. Right? But at the same, or you understand, okay, that didn't work, and adjust it until it does. Right? But it's not enough that we can just say, well, I was trying to help. Yeah, you're trying to help, but it didn't work. So acknowledge that it didn't work. And, you know, don't try to push the issue anymore. Because the situation changed. You applied it. It didn't work. The situation changed. Now you can't try to say that it was right, okay to try, because you didn't understand the situation. So it's just a matter of false ego, rather than, okay, that didn't work, so I'll have to rethink how I deal with this situation. Right? But there's no need to become insecure. It's just a matter of the mechanics didn't work. Does that make sense?
Many times I felt that when I was trying to do that, the person counter-argumented for something which checked my conviction, my perception. More specifically, let's say you're talking about Maya is only not perceiving Krishna in everything.
Mm-hmm.
Krishna has a different perspective. Maya is a specific set of activities, which is Maya. And then you end up a little bit in a philosophical debate, rather than the initial pursuit was help, which was help.
How
to move from Maya. That's just something which I...
Oh, okay. Because then you just means, in other words, you have to means you've given a perspective, and they're looking at it from another perspective, but it's not necessarily that they're equal, the perspectives. You know, I'm saying their situation is different. Let us say, you'll say anything not connected to Krishna is mine, right? Just as an arbitrary starting position, right? So the advantage is that means it can be used to accommodate anything in Krishna consciousness, so whatever situation you're in, right? So, but that's very useful when you're applying it to yourself or applying it to someone who's having a difficulty applying it, right? But now if it's a situation where the person's, they're not worrying about their own application necessarily, they're worried about someone else's application. Because the general tendency, I'm very, you know, strict with everybody else and very broad-minded with myself. You know, that's generally how we apply, you know, this thunderbolt and rose balance, right? You know, everybody else thunderbolt, myself rose. You know, it works out. Hey.
Of course.
Yeah. And because I think about myself more than others, then the rose is the prominent, so I'm a really pleasant person, right? You know. So... Now, if you said, let us say, you know, the person's done something that we would consider morally wrong, okay, because that's always a good point of contention, right? Because all religions of the world, except that based on, you know, the Vaishnav, you know, like that, is based on moral activities, good moral or bad moral. They're not actually talking about the soul or, you know, anything else. So it'll always be a strong point of consideration of good and bad. So you'll say anything not connected to Krishna. So then they'll think is in their minds, oh, so if they'd done that immoral act connected to Krishna, it would be okay. Right? So then they'll because they're looking at morality is the position of good and bad, and Krishna consciousness is good, therefore it's moral. So then they're going to say, no, it's that these activities are wrong. It means you do these activities, they can never be Krishna conscious, and these activities only can be Krishna conscious. All right? So, because what they've done is they've dropped it from the transcendental platform of Anandamoy down to Pranamoy. Right? So on the platform of Pranamoy, yes, there is what is correct and not correct. Right, so on the good and bad on Anandamaya is connected to Krishna as good, not connected to Krishna as bad. You know, when you drop it down to Vijnanamaya, then what is in consideration of Brahman is good, what's not in consideration of Brahman is bad. Right? Manamaya then, what is dharmic, you know, according to Shastra and all that is good, what's not according to Shastra, you know, as far as good work is bad. Right? When you drop it down to artha, then it's what actually creates economic development and the rules that make it that I've got my development, you can't take it. You know what I'm saying? So that's where it's going. Let us say the person's gone off with the other person's wife. Okay, the real bottom line, because unless they're quoting Dharma Shastra, you know that they always are interested in Dharma and they're a religious person. Then when they say this is wrong, he's taken the other person's wife, then you're dealing with Dharma, right? But still, okay. But more general will be that, you know, no, that's bad, you know, like that. But it's not based because Shastra says it's bad. It's just that it's socially not acceptable. Right? Does that make sense? So then they'll take it, well, you're saying, well, if they took someone else's wife, but you were Krishna conscious, then it's okay. So they'll say, no. It's just that activity is bad no matter what. Okay? So But underlying what they're missing is, why is it bad? Because if he can take his wife, he can take my wife. Not that it's just artha. You know what I'm saying? Your modern religious platforms, it's just artha. He took his money, he could take my money. So I don't want a thief because they could take my... Well, if I say, we don't want a thief in our neighborhood, am I worried for everybody else's money or my money? No, they could take my money. So the same way as I'm worried that this guy took someone else's wife and gets away with it, someone else could take mine and get away with it. But if he's punished severely, then people will think twice about stealing mine. You understand how it's working? So that's why it's said that it's not, that's why Bhagavatam opens in the second verse to kick out cheating religion, because that's cheating religion. The reason that it's bad is because God said it's not good, because it throws off the, it disturbs the relationship. Right? That's why it's bad. Not because you lost something or you gained something. Because just as you lost, the person who stole the other person's wife gained. So that's prosperous. You know what I'm saying? You know, look at the bright side. You know, the glass is not half, it's half full. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? That's what Prabhupada's making the point in this thing about, you know, your son has died, he was an enemy his last life. He's dead now, you should be happy. You know, it's that the material energy is that absurd. You just a little switch like that, and suddenly, hey, you know, it's great. You know what I'm saying? Because that's what everybody does on everything on the material platform. You know, like we were saying before, is that, you know, there was some, how you say, a serious, I'm not sure what would be, I can't give the full, what do you call it, euphemistic terminologies, you know, but we'll give you a general idea, that there was some unfortunate situation of mixed ethnicity. So then the government, you know, took, you know, how you say, dynamic steps to correct this ethnic imbalance and bring it to a pure platform of ethnicity. Right? So therefore, that purification, then, you know, for instead of having to say all these words, they just take it down to ethnic cleansing, you know. And then it's, does that make sense? So in their minds, they're doing a great job. So that's the material world. You simply change. So this, the same principle you can apply in Krishna consciousness, you change the definition. So now it's a matter of, you say that, and then you say, yes, you're correct. Means they're correct in their point. They're not correct that their point is, you know, is broader than your point. You understand? In other words, you accept the correctness of their point. Yes, to take someone else, that's incorrect. Right? So now they're going to be happy. Yes, and they might, you know, you might be able to continue speaking, or they might say a few more things because they're, you know, like that. But then you point out, but why is it wrong to steal someone else's wife? That then, that's where you're going to run into the problem. You know? Because generally they're not going to be quoting Shastra there. They're just going to say, well, it's wrong, or everybody knows, or it's just socially unacceptable, or it's bad, or, you know, they're going to use this kind of thing. Then the painting says it's wrong because Krishna has said it's wrong. So the point is this person is not connecting this to Krishna. Because if he connected to Krishna, Krishna says don't steal someone else's wife. Does that make sense? Is that right? So that's you've taken their point. You've removed that debate element, that aggression of it, validated it, but shown how it's already part of yours. So that's the synthesis. Right? And then again you go, therefore, the lack of Krishna consciousness is what makes something good or bad. Is that okay? Does that make sense? Yes? Okay. Here. Consequently, they undertake all kinds of risks, even to the point of approaching ignorant men to try to engage in the acts of Krishna consciousness, which are absolutely necessary for the human being. So it's not like it's an option. Absolutely necessary. Probably doesn't say necessary or important or a good thing to do or real nice or, you know, something like that. He says absolutely necessary. Because if a human being doesn't perform those activities, they won't be human next life. It's that simple. No, okay. 3:30. Therefore, Arjuna, surrendering all your works unto me, with full knowledge of me, without desires for profit, with no claims to proprietorship, and free from lethargy, fight. So now he's concluded all these elements before, that everything means that you're considering everything according to the Lord's direction. You see that the activity to be done, it's duty, but not the desire, the result's not yours. So now, where does that result go? It goes to him. All works to me, full knowledge of me. You had knowledge, so it should be knowledge of him, not just of the situation. Right? Without desires for profit, because if the work is for him, right, then that means the profit would be for him. Right? I do the activity because I'm going to get the result. I don't get the result, I don't do the activity. Right? So now if you want to get a result for Krishna, I have to still do the activity, even though the activity is not for me. Therefore, surrendering all your works unto me without desire for profit, you have to give both. Right? Because I may surrender the work, but I still want some of the profit. Right? Or the results for Krishna, but I don't see how that will be done, so I perform no work. Yes? Any living entity that receives prasadam. Yes, gets a human body. So that's why prasad distribution is good. Right, that, you see even in these festivals like Govardhan Puja, that it's inherent, I mean it's just implicit, that in, you know, feeding, starting from, you know, the Vaishnavas, Brahmins and Vaishnavas like that, then everybody, you know, down, and then at the end, then you have to feed the animals and the chandalas and like that. So everybody is getting fed. So that's the idea, is that everybody should be included. So with prasad, everybody can take part. Other activities, if you're having a class on Vedanta Sutra, some of these others may not be interested. But prasad, everybody is. Right? So it's the one thing you know that you can do that will be benefit. Everybody will appreciate. Overpopulation in some countries is due to. So you're saying in China, okay, there's more people in China, so does that mean that they had so much prasad before, right there? Interesting way to look at it. But the question is, but where did they take the prasad? Because then it could have been they took prasad in one country, but ended up being born in another country. You know what I'm saying? Let us say you go out and you feed prasad. You go out to the park and there's some dogs, right? Okay, you're at, you know, in San Francisco, Golden Gate Park. And you see a German shepherd, right? And you give it some prasad. And you see one of those little puffy, you know, fluffy little Pekingese dogs, and you give it some prasad. So now, when the Pekingese takes birth as a human, would it take birth in China? You know, having come from, you know, the Chinese stock, you know, and the German shepherd would naturally take birth in Germany. Or are you expecting that they'll take birth there in San Francisco? You know what I'm saying? So I wouldn't take it that far, because technically there is no overpopulation. It's just how you manage what you have. You know, like that. Yes.
I would think the purpose of giving prasad isn't that they get a human form, but that they start their spiritual life.
Yes.
But otherwise, they're just kind of pushing in the queue and pushing someone else out to get a human form.
No, you don't have to push anybody else. There's plenty of room. Like that. I mean, America's worried about overpopulation. Right? It's nine times the size of India. You know, with, you know, one third, you know, I mean, no, it's, excuse me, one third the size and India's got three times the population, so that means it's 9-1. So it means America, for the land mass that it has, could have nine times the amount of people and only be up to the level that India is. You know what I'm saying? So the Prabhupada says overpopulation is just, we just say that there is. But there isn't. It means you drive, if there's no traffic, you drive 20 minutes out of the heart of Manhattan Island. You're in forest. There's no one out there. I mean, absolutely no one there. You know, so it's, most of America's like that. So overpopulation is just something that, you know, there's a fight over facility, that's all. You know. But it's not that you can't put more people there. Is that okay? So you won't lose that. The point is, yes, it's part of devotional service, but as a byproduct, then they get human life. So there. But because they've gotten human life by taking prasad, then that element will be there. They perform the jnata sukriti, so they'll get opportunity to do a jnata sukriti again. Like that. So, you know, you feed those ducks down at the park, then they take birth as humans, then they come down to the park looking for prasad. You know, and if you're only feeding ducks, then they got a problem. Right? So that's why now you have to feed the humans, because, you know, they were ducks last life. So. Yes?
Maharaj, I used to work with this Western nutritionist, and I invited her to Govinda's. She took prasad, gave her the higher taste book.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all good. I thought it was, everything was like coming along nicely. And then a few days later, at work, she absolutely turned. The debate started off as in, like, you know, the advantages of not being a vegetarian and all that. But I found out later on in the discussion that it was really because of the fact that she was anti-religion. And she kind of like read the introduction to Krishna consciousness in the higher text.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like that I didn't actually leave that person on a, not so much in a good note, but on a healthy state, because as we were debating, there was a lot of emotions obviously coming out. And usually I'd responded in a nice way, but I ended up basically just saying, well, we don't, you know, we don't slaughter cows because it's a heavier karma. And she just didn't really respond too well.
So, yeah, well, these things, so that's why it's made the point is that you speak according to what's important to them. So their point is religion, not actually the vegetarian and this and that. So the point is it's God's creation. So all these things are there because a vegetarian was not good. Why is it a, you know, huge amount of the animal population is vegetarian? Right? And they do fine. You know, it's just like, you know, we'll say, well, if you don't eat meat, you won't be strong. But, you know, the bull eats grass. Not even grains, just eats grass. You know, it means, in other words, the bull is eating salad. Right? You know? And is being able to do the work. Why? Because his body is made like that. So the human body is made, it can function in that way. Like that, if you eat what they eat. So humans eat grains also. So vegetables, grains, milk products. That combination, then the human... So the point is it's just there is God's creation. You know, and if they don't like God, then it's just the laws of nature. You know, like that. So it's just there is a way of doing that. So it's not a matter of all these things, because by nutrition you can so easily prove that you don't have to be non-vegetarian. I mean, to try to say through the science of nutrition, they're going to prove you have to be non-vegetarian, they would be fighting a seriously losing battle. Seriously, because many of your major nutritionists in the world who have done books are vegetarians. So it's not going to work. So So the issue is just authority, you know the laws of God and all that. So it means you try to avoid introducing information that's going to distract from the actual point. In other words, you're trying to win the battle, not the war. Does that make sense? So you may, you know, a few points you just leave, so it appears that they've won that, but you're going to get the main thing.
Yeah, she just got me off the guard, that's
why. Yeah. No. But that's why practice is there, you know. And so, because the point is if it's someone that you always see and always have to work with, then you can always approach it again, you know, and just say, I thought about what you said, and this point, a good point here, there, and then do like what you said with that, and then take that and catch just what you want from it, and get them to agree on that and adjust. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like, yeah. Everything belongs to the Supreme Lord. The cashier may count millions of dollars for his employer, but he does not claim a cent for himself. Similarly, one has to realize that nothing in the world belongs to any individual person, but that everything belongs to the Supreme Lord. That is the real purport of Mayi, or unto me. Right? It all belongs to him. Right? So the point is ultimately we have a quota. Right? And so we have a right to use that quota, but we also have obligation to use that quota for who the quota is given by. Right? And when one acts in such Krishna consciousness, certainly he does not claim proprietorship over anything. Right? Means you have a right, just like the child is in the house. Right? He's sitting on the, you know, he's coming into the kitchen, you know, he's sitting on the, you know, the furniture, he's doing the different things. He's, you know, riding around in the car, but he's not claiming proprietorship, right? You know, if he says, you know, this couch is mine, his mother's going to inform him of the actual realities of life. No, it's her couch, right? You know what I'm saying? The father, it's his car, you know, it's his mom's kitchen, and you know, so like this, but he gets to use it all. But he has a quota. He can only use it the way that is being given by those who it belongs to. Right? So ultimately everything belongs to Krishna. So we have a quota. So we have a right to use that quota. But we have an obligation to use it according to who it belongs to. This consciousness is called nirmama, or nothing is mine. And if there is any reluctance to execute such a stern order, which is without consideration of so-called kinsmen in the bodily relationship, that reluctance should be thrown off. In this way, one may become vigata jvara, or without feverish mentality or lethargy. Everyone, according to his quality and position, has a particular type of work to discharge, and all such duties may be discharged in Krishna consciousness. As described above, that will lead one to the path of liberation. Right? So here Prabhupada's also confirmed that thing. You perform your duty means you have a type of work to discharge. You're in a particular situation, you have a particular type of work you're supposed to discharge. Now, you may do that in Krishna consciousness. Right? Now, the discharge of the duty in Krishna consciousness, that discharge of the duty done in Krishna consciousness, will bring you to the path of liberation. Right? That you've done it to please Krishna, that will give you bhakti, which is the real path of liberation. Does that make sense? So it means both of those activities means the proper consciousness in which you perform the activity, then that will give you devotional service and liberation. Right? In other words, you've taken the situation connected to the Lord, so then you're going to be in a transcendental situation. Devotional service is how you use the situation. Does that make sense? So it's two different things, but it's one thing. So I had a question?
No, that was it.
Oh, okay. 3:31. Those persons who execute their duties according to my injunctions and who follow this teaching faithfully without envy become free from the bondage of fruit of actions. Because right? you're doing the duty as Krishna directed. You'll become freed from material bondage. You'll be situated on the transcendental platform. Because you've done it devotionally, therefore you'll be situated on the Bhagavan platform of transcendence. If you just do it because it's your duty, right, and you're doing it as naishkarmya, it was so therefore you're recognizing the element of Brahman. You'll be situated on the platform of Brahman. Does that make sense? Right? You're doing because Paramatma is there. You'll be situated on that platform of transcendence. Right? So devotion means Bhagavan. But automatically, Bhagavan is eternity. He is everything. And he does, you know, enter into everything and make it all work. So Brahman and Paramatma are already included in Bhagavan. So if you perform your activity without attachment for the Lord, your situation in transcendence already includes Brahman and Paramatma. So you will be situated on the liberated platform, but in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Right? As opposed to just being freed from material entanglement. Does that make sense? One should have faith in the Vedic injunctions. The injunction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the essence of all Vedic wisdom, and therefore is eternally true without exception. So this is important. Here. Without exception, he's just always true. Because we'll say, oh, but it's a different situation, it doesn't apply. No, it's always true. It's just a matter of how expert you are at applying it to the circumstance. If you took the injunction, applied it, it didn't work, it doesn't mean there's a fault in the injunction. Right? It doesn't mean that the situation has now become more powerful. Because by saying that, then you're saying that material energy is more powerful than God. Right? No, it means that we didn't understand how to apply that injunction in the situation. So either our detail was correct, but the principle was wrong, or principle was correct, detail was wrong. Or we could have had both wrong. Right? Yes?
I don't know what's the actual meaning of injunction?
Rule? The rule for action, because injunction generally is connected with something that you do. Right? Does that make sense? So injunction is you offer your food, what you eat you offer to the Lord. Okay? So then that's the injunction. Now let us say we are in our house. Okay? And we have some food. So what do we do? Where do we take it? Right? We generally take it in some way, put it on the altar, do some way, there's some, you know, more pancharatric aspect of the ritual there, right? And then we may bow down, offer prayers, ring a bell, you know, do all kinds of things, right? Okay? Let us say we're traveling and we're on a bus. The bus stopped at some place, you know, for petrol you got off, you bought something in the little store there. And now everybody's getting back on the bus. Now the injunction is you have to offer what you're going to eat to Krishna. So now what are you going to do? Get out your picture, go up to the front of the bus, you know, and I'll put the picture there, you know, next to the driver, put the stuff up there, bow down, ring the bell. Right? No. So, but if you did that, and you got yourself thrown off the bus or something, then you can't say that, no, the injunction to offer, you know, everything we eat to Krishna is wrong. It doesn't apply in this modern situation. You know, it just means that how you apply it, we didn't apply it properly. Does that make sense? Yes. So that means that when we apply the different things of Krishna consciousness, of surrender, of varnashram, of, you know, the elements of deity worship, all these different things, we have to understand the circumstance that we're in. Right? Because circumstances are always changed, so that means we have to understand the principle. If that's understood, then we'll be able to understand what's there. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like let's say, or you take something in between. We were in, it was a devotee, you know, van or, you know, vehicle, right? So they have the picture on the front of the dashboard, right? So any offerings done by the devotee in the car goes on the dashboard, right? You know? And so, but they were stopped at a place, there were lots of people walking around, and people would be looking in. So then if you took what you wanted to offer and made it so that the picture could see, then also everybody else could see. Right? Does that make sense? So, what was the boga was in a bag, so they took the picture and put it in the bag. And then made the offer. You understand? So, that way then you make adjustments with the situation. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like that. It works. Okay, the injunction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is the essence of all Vedic wisdom, and therefore is eternally true without exception. So the injunction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the essence of all Vedic wisdom. Right? So the Vedic wisdom, one has faith in that, but that has come from Krishna. Right? So Krishna, what he gives, that's the essence of what the Vedas are trying to say. They'll give so much broad range of detail so that anyone in any circumstance can connect themselves to the Lord. But sometimes it gets so, not necessarily distant, but so indirect, indirect, that it may be hard to see. So therefore the injunction that Krishna is giving, you know, here in Gita where he's speaking, that should be how all injunctions of the Vedas are understood. One should have firm faith in this injunction without envying the Lord. Right? Not that why is he always right, you know? You know, why can't I get a few? There are many philosophers who write comments on the Bhagavad Gita but have no faith in Krishna. They will never be liberated from the bondage of fruit of action. Right? And those philosophers, generally speaking, because he's not worried about Vaishnav philosophers. He's generally worried about Mayavad philosophers. So here's also another indirect way that it mentions that when we always ask, well, will the Mayavadis go to Brahman? No. It says they'll never be free from the bondage of fruit of action. Right? Does that make sense? Because we say that the killers of the soul, they go to hell. Going to hell is only for those who are bound by fruit of action. Right? Because if you attain Brahman platform, there is no heaven or hell. Does that make sense? So they never actually get out of that because they're envious of Krishna. Now you can't be envious of the guy who manages the whole thing and expect you'll get liberated. But an ordinary man with firm faith in the eternal injunctions of the Lord, even though unable to execute such orders, becomes liberated from the bondage of the law of karma. Right? So even though if you have faith in it and you're making the attempt, though you're not doing a very great job of it, you will be liberated. Right? So when we're pointing out weaknesses in the performance of their activity because it's not very expertly done, we're speaking on the element that since the result's for Krishna, we want to get a better result for Krishna, so therefore improve the standard of your endeavor. Because then Krishna will get a better result. But as far as the application of the philosophy to their situation, like that, they'll be liberated by that, even though they didn't do a good job. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why the transcendental vision, the transcendental position, is so different from everything else. But that's because he had faith. Now, if he doesn't have faith and he's doing a bad job, that's very weak. Or if someone has good faith and is a very expert, it's still very weak. Right? You get a nice result, but the result's still not for Krishna, so what's the benefit? In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, one may not not fully discharge the injunctions of the Lord, but because one is not resentful of this principle and works sincerely without consideration of defeat and hopelessness, he will surely be promoted to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness. Right? So he's not resentful of this principle, that is correct. So if we're resentful that, no, this is the modern age, we can't use these injunctions that are given here and that, that will not be progressive in Krishna consciousness. We have to be very expert to apply them to the situation. Right? Right? To be gentle, to be sophisticated, to be cultured, doesn't mean one has to act as a karmi does. Right? Sophistication, gentleness, all these different things come from Krishna consciousness. Krishna is the most gentle, most intelligent, most cultured. So that means his devotees are. So that's where it comes from. The materialist has these qualities, it's only a reflection. So we don't have to be like that, we can be like ourselves. Right? And here, without consideration, defeat and hopelessness. It's not working nicely, but it doesn't mean we get, without consideration, defeat and hopelessness. He will surely be promoted to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness. Right? So it's just a matter, if he has that faith and acts, then one will come to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada, Jaya, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda Ki, Jaya Nitai Gaura Premanandi.